It's definitely the pinky. If you
Yeah.
maybe said a different finger, I might, but pinky is ancillary. And it's a good story, right? You know, like, oh, how do you lose your
Team pinky
pinky?
too,
Perry
Roberto.
made me choose, will be my answer. That's how I lost my pinky.
Roberto, I had so much respect for you until that answer. I can't, well,
Are you hiccups? Is that yours?
I'm keeping. I don't want to mutilate my hand. These things are amazing. Get rid of a
Call
pinky
me
and
on
chop off a part of my body.
month two of your hiccups. Call me without my pinky.
Welcome to Under Embargo, the podcast that says the quiet part out loud about PR, communications, and the chaos in between. Hosted by two of LinkedIn's most connected comms pros, Becca Chambers, a no BS corporate comms exec with raging ADHD, and Parry Hedrick, founder of tech PR firm Crackle PR. This show brings it all. Real talk, sharp insights, and the kind of industry truths they don't put in press releases. No fluff, no filters, no f**ks given. This is Under Embargo. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the Under Embargo podcast. I am your co-host, Becca Chambers. I'm CMO of Scale Venture Partners, and I am joined by my co-host and partner in crime, Perry Hedrick, who is founder of Crackle PR. And today we are lucky to be joined by Roberto Munoz, CEO and founder of Munoz Communications, which is a strategic comms consultancy that helps businesses navigate growth and transformation. I did a little bit of LinkedIn stalking and saw that he's been, well, he's been in comms for over 20 years, but he's been at some pretty cool organizations from HSBC, Fannie Mae, Jaguar, which is cool, Land Rover. And we've been connected for a really long time on LinkedIn, and we're in some of the same communications groups, and his name is always coming up in conversations, and somehow we have never been on a call together. So I'm really excited for us to chat, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. The power of LinkedIn bringing us together.
I know.
Yeah. Similarly, you've been in my orbit on LinkedIn for, I don't know, a couple of years at least. And we've had a couple of back and forths and all that. And it's one of those things where how do you not have a conversation with somebody that's so often in your midst? I'm glad we're having it today.
You want to
Absolutely.
hear your name was literally spoken in a room on Tuesday night. I was at an event and
Ooh.
somebody mentioned that they were listening to the Under Embargo or watching the podcast. And I was like, ooh, yay, which one did you watch? And they mentioned which one they watched. And I was saying how I was looking for guests. And somebody mentioned, why don't you have Roberto on? And I was like, he's the next recording that we have. That is wild. So there you
Gosh,
go.
I'm like an influencer in a way I didn't even know.
You didn't even know, but your name is being spoken in rooms of comms professionals
Well,
in the
that's
Bay Area.
wonderful.
So
I
very
want to be in a room where people speak my name and where there's opportunity. So good for you.
very well,
Exactly.
your podcast was being spoken about, so
Which
that's
is nice.
pretty
I'll accept that.
cool. So I guess where do we want to start? I have a whole list of topics, but like one thing that people always ask me, so I'm going to ask you because it's in your profile, what is a fractional chief communications officer and what do they
Oh.
actually do?
Interesting because and I think there's actually some debate that should be had around how fractional chief communications officers use, because it's actually a
Totally.
polarizing topic. Folks are like,
Totally. That's why I'm
is it
bringing it up.
interim, is it fractional? I the rise of fractional work in other functions and other areas has been something like fractional out of finance, fractional marketing officer, and I think they're more established in a way that it's kind of the ability to come in either as a maternity cover at a major inflection point for the company. They're not ready to hire the full-time person, but they need the senior quality role to come in. Coming in, building systems, building processes, getting the engine set up, or just kind of keeping the wheels turning when there's a moment that they need to have a really senior comms person in the room.
Crisis.
So, correct. crisis. I think crisis would be part of what a fractional would do, but it wouldn't necessarily be the reason that you're brought in as a fractional, unless it was like a sustaining crisis, right? Like mm-hmm. it was something that you would want. I think there's so many different verticals of what a fractional role will do that it's almost like a proxy of pedicoms that comes in to the organization. But I think the interesting dichotomy here for me is that fractional, so when you're trying to explain it to the market, like fractional is kind of hard to describe in the first place. And I think also what comms does, as we all know, can be really difficult to explain. No. So
what?
So branding fractional communications officer requires lots of asterisks and sub bullets underneath of it. Yeah. So maybe there's a branding issue here, but that's one of the services I offer, especially for growth stage businesses. They really need, you know, to bring somebody in, but they might not be ready to hire a full-time person.
How long are your engagements typically, or is there no typical amount? Every company's a snowflake.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a bit of a snowflake, but you kind of want to be there long enough to make a meaningful difference, right? So I think it's like more of the minimum threshold of like, you know, you at least want to be there for 3 months, if not longer. But it really does change depending. And you know, sometimes they offer you the job to come in. So it could be like a try before you buy. I think another interesting thing is, if you apply for a job and maybe you don't get it, or that they're having trouble finding or filling the seat, offering to be a fractional in the interim, right? If there's a try before you buy for the company, but it's also interesting that maybe they do need to paper over the cracks, but you might not have been the long-term fit, but you could be the short-term solution. I've actually found a couple of roles that were open where they just needed somebody to slot in while the hiring process was taking longer.
I also think a lot of companies don't really, I mean, to your point, people don't know what comms does. So when they're like, we need somebody to solve this problem, but we only need them for a few months and it's not really a full-time whatever. And then you come in and you do it. And then you're also doing 400 other things. And then they're like, oh shit, we really do need somebody full-time to do this and lead this function in a real meaningful way. And then it becomes a role. So it's almost like, it's not even just try before you buy. It's like, prove yeah. out value of comms to people that didn't really understand what the value of comms was. So I actually think what you're doing is like a really important kind of it's a cool way for you to like expand the comms function in ways that for people who don't necessarily value it right now, right?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting too, because if you're looking at it like as a product, as a commodity, like it is harder to explain. And then also it becomes like murkier waters of how much does that cost if I don't understand the value of it. But when you're inside and you actually have the relationship, the trust, the education around it, it becomes a lot easier to say, oh, actually, now we should go look at this. Or do you have audience personas? Do you have messaging swim lane? Like, and do you have a channel strategy? Where I think if you try to sort of put that up front, it might put somebody's back against the wall because they don't fully understand it. But when you're inside of the machine, it's much easier, I think, to build that rapport and that future runway of work.
And then after 3 months taking it away, like, yeah. you know, good luck, right? Now you've built the thing and shown the value, and you can't just like walk out and say good luck. Yeah.
Are you comfortable signing on as, let's say, a fractional hire if the C-suite isn't really clear on what the comms function is or does, though? And I ask that question because I always talk about as a PR agency owner, I usually tend to walk away when I hear from the CMO or the head of comms that the CEO doesn't really get PR, because to me that right. means it's going to necessarily turn into a circular firing squad within 3 to 9 months, because the CEO who doesn't really get PR is expecting glowing coverage in like a month. The CMO is between a rock and a hard place, trying to like deal with the PR team who's like, we can't perform miracles. And the next thing you know, somebody's got to go. So usually it's the PR team. So long-winded way of asking, are you comfortable signing on when you feel that out of the gate, you're going to have to spend more time educating than you are executing?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's one place where it's that they don't understand it. There's another place that there's sort of feel that they can control it, or they don't respect it. And I think that for me, yeah. it's like, if you didn't respect communications and sort of what it could be, that's one place. But to have an open mind and to want to be educated, because a lot of growth stage CEOs, you know, they really haven't been in a place where they've had to really understand strategic communications beyond kind of the distribution of the channel, right? Or even if that. So I found that, you know, if I walked away from everything in some of those, I feel like I might walk away from more business than I would want to. But I also, it is really nice when a CMO is in place, because that I found, because one, they hired the CMO before the comms person, right? Because they need to get that muscle moving faster. But also you have, usually with the CMO, at least you're kind of speaking a similar language, where I think that they're inside and they can help you navigate the politics, and they actually understand a little bit of what you do. If not, you know, they've done the role in other ways. But I find that bridge is somewhat even more helpful than any other role when I'm into a fractional position.
Can I ask you, since you brought up the CMO, and I have strong opinions about this, Do you think that comms should sit within marketing, or do you think that comms should be its own, you know, its own function, the way that marketing is its own function and sales is its own function?
I mean, I firmly believe that it should be its own function. You know, I've been in different reporting lines, and I've been in places that, you know, the structure is, you know, the further away, they're always like, oh, well, you're not reporting directly to the CEO, but you'll have a direct line of sight.
Yeah.
But you're not in the board meeting.
Dotted line, right. It's I call it the small C. You're a small C because you don't get the big C in the C-suite.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like, how can somebody who doesn't understand our function in the way that we do represent our work and big conversations that need the, or like, they don't even know necessarily what to listen for.
Looking around corners. We can't look around corners if we're not like in the fucking room to look around the corner, you know? Yeah. Like, come on. No,
I fully agree. I do think that comms is having we're having a moment for lots of reasons, right?
Wrong
the pandemic, reason. You know, yeah. Right? The turbulence and politically, yeah. Economically. But, you know, I do think that we've moved ourselves further up the conveyor belt where, you know, previously, I started to equate this where the HR function was, like, 10, 15 years ago, there was more like benefits and, you know, hiring, you know, sort of like pro forma kind of HR policies. Where now if you look at HR, it's like a really strategic function that's got tools and measurements and sort of a broader purview. I think comms is one, I think that we should put our hand up, but I also think that for us to continue to be our own vertical, which I think we need to, we also need the right skills. We need the right, we need the right growing up talent across the trainings. So I think that as the function does own that space, we also have a responsibility in order to be able to speak like a business leader, not just a comms leader.
So
sorry, go ahead, Perry.
That's okay. I wrote a LinkedIn post last year at some point, and it was a very hot take. I came in hot with this one, which was that marketing should actually report to comms. And I defended it in the post. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of inherent tension to that hot take. So it took off, like it blew up. And, you know, all the comms people were DMing me like, thank God somebody finally said it. And the marketing people were like, are you crazy? We handle all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. And then my thinking has evolved over time where I think at the very least, marketing and comms should be on similar footing. And I think I'll take it a step further and ask you what I'm starting to believe now, which is that marketing and comms may both ladder up to brand, which oversees the whole damn thing.
There should be a chief brand officer.
What do you think about that as a hierarchical structure?
Like brand or like chief customer officer, right? Or something, you know, somebody that's got the touch points and the purview. I think that makes sense. And I think that we're kind of all playing nice in the same. We're like, we kind of have our elbows up like, oh, it's marketing. Oh, it's comms. Oh, it's HR. Right. Because I think that's the other, if you put the Venn diagram together, HR's.
Can I interrupt though? The problem with everyone you just said is each one of those groups has a particular stakeholder. Comms is all of the stakeholders. So HR, employees, right? Marketing, customers, right? Like every group has its own stakeholder, but comms is all of the stakeholders. So I just feel like you can't, I don't know, you can't bucket us in the same way that we're not as niche. We have to have a higher, a more strategic view of the whole business than all of these other groups do.
I agree. But there also is the need, no matter how the report, like put reporting aside, and I don't know that's hard to do, but like we all do have a piece of the pie that comes together in a way that makes it whole. If you put culture together with sort of talent acquisition and retention, putting it together with brand, putting it together with customer, like, and I think that maybe sometimes there's a little bit too much protectionism of who owns what, but at the end of the day, if you're not all working together to collectively achieve that, it's just not going to work, right? You're in silos. And you can actually see that on your website sometimes. They're like, they're not talking to each other. Totally. But so I just think that, I do think the reporting conversation is important, but I think actually the way in which the operating model underneath of it pins it together in a way that understands the interdependencies is equally important, if not more in some ways.
And I think that like companies that have a CEO that really value a comms person as advisor are the ones that are elevating like the whole comms function, right? It's not just that they're like, oh, I have my exec comms person who's my sidekick or my chief of staff. It's like they have their head of comms who they value as also a executive advisor like everybody else in the C-suite. And so the whole comms function at the company is elevated. And I think that's kind of the future of how comms moves up in the world, but we need more CEOs who see that value, because it really is like we are the help us help you crew. And I wish more people saw that. Like all we're here to do is make everybody else look better, make your job easier. And like, we're just here to like usher you into a better era. So just like,
if only it weren't that pesky measurement piece.
Yeah.
Because that's ultimately what it boils down to. It's right. Like everything you've said is right, Becca and Roberto. Like, you know, the job we do is multifaceted. It's a big, sprawling, hairy number of things that we are on top of and having to manage and build a halo effect around and all that. But at the end of the day, if the pipeline isn't crackling with leads, then ultimately, heads roll, and that's comms and that's PR because of the lack of a one-to-one relationship between what we do and the bottom line. And I think that is a hard thing to overcome, which is why we're always having to re-explain what it is we do and why it matters. And when the economy goes south, why our heads roll down the stairs and you know, we wait until the cooler heads prevail and the green shoots come back.
Amen.
I do think that measurement, because I agree with that our function measurement's an area I think that we collectively as an industry need to focus on more. I you know, sitting in board meetings and sitting in house roles where, you know, you're looking at everybody's sort of scorecards and there's red, amber, greens, and there's specific metrics and, you know, measure what matters. And, you know, and I think that there is art to the world we do a lot, and there is the gut, but there's also some science to it. And obviously, not just sound, there's a lot of science to it. And I think that finding measurements and the tools to help to support that is really important for our function increasingly as we do get the seat at the table, so that we're speaking the same language as the rest of the business. And I think that automatically gives credibility and also helps to drive the business forward and the function forward in a smarter way. So I just think we're a little nascent in that area, and I'm excited to see how we build more of those types of tools and competencies in our functional areas. AI, I'm interested in what you all think.
I think AI is going to be really helpful for us. I think that's been like a blind spot for us. It's just like, how do we aggregate like shifts in sentiment in real time, right? Like that's a really hard thing to do. So AI for sure. We were just, one of our recent podcasts was with the head of comms at Meltwater, and we were talking about how this is going to change the game, and it totally is. I also think that there needs to be a recognition that no matter what, whether it's a campaign, whether you're looking at brand over time, like everything is going to be measured differently. Like there's not going to be just like a standard set of metrics that are going to work in every, like for you and your clients. You're not just going to go in and be like, well, this is what I measure every time I go somewhere, right? And I think comms people need to just like get comfortable with going in and learning how to create new dashboards and getting like, yes, it is a huge pain in the ass to create bespoke ways of measuring things. But if you're creating a campaign, what are the goals you're trying to achieve? How are you going to measure those? You can't just say, oh, here's share of voice. Like, how is that?
Impression.
Yeah. Sweet. 4 billion people saw this article. What?
Wait, add value equivalency. Come on, man.
I know. And it's like, oh, hey, your brand launch got 900,000 views. And it's like, by who? Well, we don't know. Oh, cool. I mean, it's just one of those things. And like, yes, vanity metrics, whatever. And I just like, how do we translate that into value? That's our problem. We can spout fucking metrics. Sorry, all the F-bombs today. It's just, I'm a little punchy this morning.
Current mood.
Spout all of the metrics all day and we can get AI to tell us things. But if we don't translate that into like the value that it brings, the outcome that we're driving, then who cares? And I think that's kind of like where we need to start focusing as comms people. We're storytellers. Like the so what part? Let's give the don't bury the lead, people.
Yeah. Well, I said this earlier, but to dig into it, like speaking the language of the business is a big thought that I always think about, because it's like most businesses, data and measurement is something that's a pretty high muscle for folks, right? Like they think that way. They think about the finances, the P&Ls, and how do we steering the organization. And I think to actively participate in that conversation, if we are able to speak that language, it's really important to not just get the credibility and the trust, but to be able to like come into the room with something that feels tangible, linked to business goals and comms goals. That's like, this is actually what we're driving and we should change this. We should alter this. We should iterate on this. And I think that conversation needs to be more robust, and that's the way to get the credibility.
And as a comms leader, like, guys, if we're putting out this press release, what is the point of this? What goal are we trying to drive with this, right? And starting to like talk to your teams about it so that they start to understand when they're doing things, why are they doing it? So that they can start to inject more strategic lens on things. I just think that's how we all get smarter.
Does this need to go over the wire? Should this maybe just go on our website? Maybe
yeah.
we just
get
to the right. sales team. Maybe LinkedIn. This could have been a LinkedIn post
yeah.
instead. Why are we doing all of this? Exactly.
It's funny though. Sometimes you go and do a like, you know, you'll have done your comm strategy. You're targeting the right audience with the, you know, the blog is the right answer, or the newsletter, which is it's a niche, but it was 100% to the right target. And you know, you're so proud of that campaign, and then you go into the board meeting, and you know, there's, you know, the trade publication cover that, you know, you didn't need to be in, but it was a pet project of one of the leaders, and they're like touting it around the meeting of like, look how great this is.
Put that on my fridge.
No one read that, you know, like it didn't meet your audience. And it's just so funny how like that, again, one, to be in the room to make sure that you can correct on that type of thing versus allowing that to become the right answer, but also just to do the education around, okay, well, that was a great thing that we have our picture on the front of that, but we go back to our goals and our audience and our messaging, this is not driving the outcome that we need. And I think that, you know, you don't want to do it the right way, but I've seen that happen so many times that it actually then rearranges your comm strategy and you're like, wait, that's not the right place. Sorry.
That is like maybe the most important point is that yes, there is some amount of this that is on the comms leaders to put it in the language that business people understand, but it is also on business people to listen to comms leaders and allow us to be in the room so that you're not just flashing stupid shit and saying, hey, look at what we did, when we're telling you that's not what moves the needle, or that's not the thing that matters right now, or that's not the message that our audiences need to hear, because we are the experts. And I think that there is this like view of like, oh, but everyone knows how to do comms. So like, right. you know, and I find that so frustrating. And I find the lack of desire to learn from the business suite of people, lack of desire to learn from real communications leaders who have amazing pedigrees. I find that so frustrating. And I know that most communications leaders find that so frustrating, but I don't see that in other industries. I don't see people talking down to finance people like they're kindergartners, like, oh, hey,
or legal, for example.
Yeah. Right. Cute spreadsheet. Hey, right. Can I have a template. Hey, I'm a comms leader, but let me give you my template for Excel, Mr. Finance guy. Like, are you kidding me? But they have no problem doing that for me all day long. Right.
Right. It's like, you're like, you should build your data center in Kansas.
Yeah,
I just think that's the right answer. You know, it's like, wait, we've done all the research and that's not the right answer. Mm-hmm. I think the interesting rub for me slightly, though, is that everybody in a business is a communicator. it's, you know, it's in your job description, you know, it literally is. And so there's the, you know, there's the strategic communications function that we don't want to bottleneck and we don't want to own everything, but the teach the teacher, you know, building the skills for leaders to be better communicators is important. I think that there's an interesting rub there though, where like, I'm not doing a whole lot of like data work, right? Like, in terms of like IT work, right? But everybody in the business is required to be a communicator. So there is like a different, different area.
But I have to make spreadsheets to make a budget. Yeah. I have to make slides to, you know, do my job. And I'm not. And Lord
knows you have to beautify and prettify and comsify everything.
What it really is it's belittling. Our people belittle our role all day, every day, and they do it to senior level people. And it's bad enough when it happens to junior level people. Like, I am so offended by the way that people talk to even mid and junior level comms people, but like, I see it happen to senior level comms people all the time. And we are used to it and we are friendly and it's part of our job. So we kind of allow it and we take it, but it is kind of bullshit that we, have to also be the hospitality suite in the C-suite if we're invited. 100%.
You know? Everybody thinks that they can do our jobs, which is fun. It's always fun when everybody in your universe thinks they can do your job just as good as you, or you know, has a solution that they can just put into Chat GPT and now they're experts. Like, that's always fun. And I don't see that actually improving in the advent of AI. I feel like that's going to get worse, not better, because everybody has easy access to seemingly intelligent sounding responses that they can then parrot back like everybody else, which is my way to transition back to the AI thing a little bit, because I wanted to ask you, Roberto, when we talk about the AI piece, I think that our PR model is going to change radically. Like, I have a value-based model where I charge, you know, X amount based on the 10,000 hours of knowledge I've acquired to do the job. But a lot of big agencies and a lot of big consultancies, they charge by the hour, right? So how are you going to square that when you can use AI to do in seconds what it used to take a team of interns or account executives like 3 weeks or a month to do? So that whole, the whole billing model, the whole relationship with money is changing radically. And I'm wondering, are you worried at all that over, you know, the next months and years that we might be commoditized too, in the same way that some of the underlings in the agencies and consultancies are today?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to radically change how we use it as a tool, but then also how that tool becomes parts of what we were doing, which is a highly valuable skill. You know, there's so many, if you just allow yourself to go into like, as you're going through your list of things you're doing and you're like, is AI going to be able to do this better than I do in 2 years? The answer is probably getting close to yes. You know, like I was
high graphic designers, high copywriters, like already. Even getting crazy.
I've met a couple of different people that are founders and CEOs that are doing AI comms tools now. They're like building out narratives. Like, you know, you have the right prompts. You know, it might not be perfect there, but it gets you 80%. And, you know, that's a big piece of work, right? And it's a high value piece of work. Or audience segmentation and benchmarking against your competitors and real
competitive intelligence. Like, 100%.
That's just sort of nuts for like, you know, a stakeholder map, you know, that could take like a whole month, right? But actually to be able to get that. So I think it's going to radically just shift how we think about work. One of the things that I'm really interested in understanding more and seeing how it goes is the premium on real, on human, on authenticity. And I have this idea, and I don't know where it's going to go, but I'll shoot it out there. Like, there's almost like an Energy Star seal of approval that might start to happen, or like locally grown in the same way of like a sticker that's like, this is real. Like, this is actually this person speaking. And this
made
is
by humans.
Like, made by humans, right? Where actually that could become the premium in a world that over-indexes into sort of, you know, we all see the milquetoast sort of LinkedIn posts that people are writing, you know, this obviously from ChatGPT. But like, once you see that there's a human there and you know that you're actually hearing from that human, there's just totally different relationship of trust and connection to that. So I think that I'm really interested to see where AI can't go, because it's this sort of EQ side of how we connect and relate to people as communicators, not just the functional get stuff done. And I'll be interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, I think to that point, I feel that the true pros, the true experts are going to rise in the whole sea of sameness thing, where, you know, the run of the mill folks who are just out there kind of mailing it in, doing their job every day, they're going to suffer because they are going to embrace and adapt this sort of, you know, banal, same bullshit that everybody's putting into the GPT model, where it's the people that are truly creative, truly have inventive ideas, are able to express those ideas in a profoundly unique and human way. I think there's going to be a premium, but I think the number of people is going to be a lot smaller than it is today. I think I think AI is going to help winnow out some of the posers, if you will.
But in it's also the people who can take 14 AI tools and create something cool with it, rather than, like you say, the lazy people that are like, okay, prompt, spit something out and whatever. Like, yeah, everyone's going to be using AI to do stuff, but they're going to be like very advanced in the way that they're using it, right? And it's going to be the people who are continually learning and continually iterating, just like anything else, right? Like the people that are like sharpening their toolkit all the time. And I think that's who's going to win in the next era. Like, agencies, right? However you guys start to scale your agency with AI. So the agencies that start to like, okay, we have 10 humans right now in our agency and we do 100 hours a week of whatever. Now we're going to have 10 humans and we're going to do 1,000 hours of a week of whatever, right? And that's how you're not going to replace people, but you're going to do a shitload more. And I think that's just like how we as humans, it's the only way that we're going to be able to keep up in this race. And a lot of people who are complacent and lazy and don't feel like learning are going to get left behind
There are people that are like 5 years away from retiring. They're thinking like, shit, should I just cash in my chips now?
I mean, I'm shocked by the number of people that aren't even using ChatGPT now. That's like somebody saying to me that they don't even use Google, right? Like, that's like somebody saying to me that, like, if I ask them, like, how they get somewhere, they pull out, like, a map, at, like, a paper map and, like, some, you know, like, what?
I was at a bar having some Chinese food the other day, and I know a lot of the people that are there, and I was taking pictures of them and using ChatGPT and say, make this picture look like a Norman Rockwell painting. And it took like, you know, 30 seconds to generate the image, and I would show it to them. They were looking at me like I was a fucking wizard. They're like, what the hell is that? Like, they had no idea that was even remotely possible. Like,
wow.
And I was doing party trick after party trick. Everybody at the bar was coming over, and I was like, this is the most rudimentary function of an AI. But wow, here we are. I'm dazzling you right now.
You should start charging. Be like, wait, see what else I can show you guys. I could teach you guys how to do this.
I actually put a post at my office at home. I have a post-it note that says, can AI do it better? And I put it up there because there were so many times that I kept defaulting back to, okay, just write the brief or write the proposal or, but you know, but like get a few decks, throw them in there and say like, hey, with a really good prompt.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think that they were going to be good at this, but that's like that just saved me 3 hours. You know,
prompt will get you like enough going that it'll save you a bunch of time, you know?
Exactly. I think it was the Shopify CEO that said recently, like, we're not hiring anybody until you can prove that AI can't do their job better.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty big shot across the bow, man. And like,
but did you see that they also just expanded their office space by a shitload? So it's
what a coincidence.
Oh, really?
Amazing. AI is going to occupy their office space, I guess.
Yeah, the servers, the robots are moving in.
I guess my next question that I had written down when I was stalking your LinkedIn, because I thought it was super interesting that you were doing a DEI role way before DEI was even a thing. Like before DEI was a term, you had DEI in your title. So tell me about that and how that came to be and how you came into that role.
Well, so I when I my first job out of school, I went to work for a boutique affinity marketing agency, a marketing communications agency in DC. And this is back, you know, I'm not to date myself too much, but yeah, this is 20 years ago, right? But DE&I was very different then in terms of how it, what it looked like. And this is a lot of like bigger companies that were wanting to dip their toe into the LGBTQ market or into the African-American market or, you know, Hispanic market or people with disabilities even, right? You know, it's very segmented sort of populations. And it was kind of like a project that happened on the side, right? It would be like a ring fence thing that would be like, we want to go to reach gay and lesbian people.
So it's like a targeted, like, let's create a campaign to
do a partnership with GLAAD Media Awards or with the HRC and only and marketed in the publications with specific art that wasn't showing two gay couples, but it could be a man and a man that were kind of sitting next to each other, which could be suggested. But we're giving the context here because it's such a fascinating journey over the past, you know, 20 years and even the past 6 months, right? But where that became not just like the keep the dragons away from the castle, but you know, see if we can make some money into essential to who we are, what our values are, how we connect with consumers, with communities. And then now obviously in a very sort of different place, it's moving around, you know, do you put DE&I in your title anymore? Do you put it on your experience? Right.
Or do you get penalized and withheld funding for using it?
Right, exactly. You know, and these are real questions that sort of feel like, you know, questions you don't want to have to answer because they feel sort of dark, in my opinion. But at the same time, you also go like, you know, what does DE&I mean today? And I think that everybody's still really grappling with what that question looks like. But there's a lot of companies that are, you know, changing, you know, either obviously letting the head of DE&I that came in go or reconfiguring the departments or changing it from CSR and ESG to impact, right? And so there's a lot of, some of the guts of the machine aren't changing as much as
the branding is.
That's around it. It's always been a red thread through my career. I mean, it's personal to me because I'm a gay man, but also it's just, I think the pendulum's going to swing back in terms of how it relates back to values, but it's, I think it's certainly a fascinating place for communicators to be really thinking hard about this area because it's sort of a big risk. It's a risk area for a business and also an opportunity for a business, depending upon how you look at it. But getting on the you only can be wrong, right? In this slightly, but you kind of have to do a risk calculation of what's the right answer for your business.
I don't think that there's anybody who's in a harder spot than the comms leaders for this, to be honest, because we're often in the middle of the leadership and employees, right? And often that is the leadership taking one perspective and employees taking another, or employees wanting leadership to have a perspective and knowing that they can't, and hearing a lot of pressure. I don't know. I've been in a lot of roles where I've just been kind of like sandwiched between a lot of noise about like values and what's right and what's wrong, and just hating every second of it, because it's like, yeah, you have to protect the reputation of the company and do what's right for the company. And sometimes that is in conflict with your own personal values and knowing what's right for the people that you work with. And all of it feels horrible. And I think that's only going to get worse
I'd like to think that there are companies that are taking strong stands or considering taking strong stands on the question we're talking about here, because you kind of get back from the world what you put out there. And that's how I'm trying to live my life and build my company in that same way by, you know, I only want to work with demonstrably good people, and I am not going to work with bigots or racists or, you know, homophobes or you name it, just full stop. And I feel like because of that, and because I'm so sort of vocal about those basic principles of decency, I tend to attract people both in terms of employees and in terms of companies that respect and want to work with similar minded groups. So my hope is that over time, as what I think is the resistance to the current administration begins to, you know, sort of pick up steam, I think that more and more companies are going to double down on what they started to do before the fear was out there and the fear of retribution kind of darkened their doorways. And I'd like to think that what we're seeing here is a little bit of an extinction burst from this sort of archaic draconian way of thinking, and the real enlightenment is about to happen before we know it. That's my hope. Whether I'm right remains to be seen, but I choose to side with progress over, you know, going backward into the 19th century.
I'll piggyback on what you said. I think it's a sort of slightly broader point, but it's really specific to this conversation too, is, you know, leading with values, right? And I know that I think a lot about comm strategy and how that, you know, I always say, like, don't pick out the window curtains if you haven't built the foundation yet. You know, you're always, you know, so when you're thinking about like communications and like purpose, mission, values, which everything's born from, values become incredibly important in this moment, because if you go against, I think about brands like People all the time, you know, if you've got this shady friend who says they're one thing, but they're all, you know, they say they're really trustworthy, but they're always late, they never pay back, they're not very trustworthy, right? Where it's like, I think that if apply that to so many different areas of logic, when that's where communications is the mirror back to the business in so many ways, but like, what are your true values? And this is really testing the resolve, and brands that are being seen and leaders that are being seen to have been sort of Pollyanning towards it and then retrenching and changing. I mean, that's just like the friend you don't want to be friends with anymore. So I think that there's a real question here that brands
need. There's no true north. It's whatever direction the wind's blowing.
Well, right. And the humans behind brands matter now more than they've ever mattered. They will, that trend is going to continue, right? Like, Mark Zuckerberg is Meta. Like, Meta's entire brand reputation is whatever people think about Mark. Ditto. Yep. X,
ditto
right
X.
Now,
right? Ditto,
like, I mean, even we take out the political whatever, like, deal and rippling, right? With the shady ass espionage shit going on, that was just the CEO doing shady stuff, but that whole company's brand is just
right
toasted. And I feel like there's so much of that, and if you've got a CEO who's out there doing, I don't know, cool things, saying things that your values align with, then like, you're more likely to buy from that company, or at least more likely to have an affinity for that company. And I don't know, this is all of our jobs, but then we're trying to convince people to do more of this, but like, why more companies don't understand that, I don't know. Like, why, like, let's post this from our corporate LinkedIn handle. It's like, no, post it from your handle. All right, right? Like, you write it from your voice, because that's what people care about. They don't care what Walmart says. They care what, you know, CEO says.
I think do no harm tends to be the prevailing sort of thinking around being controversial and putting yourself out there. I mean, you know, I get it. I get when there's a lot of stakeholders involved and there's a lot of revenue on the line. I get the idea of wanting to play it safe, but it's the brands that don't play it safe, like the Patagonias and others that you tend to gravitate toward if you are valuing certain sets of values that are in alignment with that. And then similarly, the Targets of the world and others who are getting rid of policies that we all know to be decent and right, like they're suffering. And I think I admire the leaders that speak up and take a stand. And to your point, Becca,
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. Please.
I was just going to say that I think that it's interesting where if you're in a culture of an organization where it's not just only, you know, it's really difficult to put yourself out there as a leader, right? Yeah. Or as a person, right? We know this, we're doing it on LinkedIn, we're doing comms, we kind of understand the art and the science around it. But in an organizational culture where you're not rewarded for going out there, because the risk of you being seen as, I might have said the wrong thing and I'm going to get in trouble for that, it does put paralysis in an organization, which really takes away a jewel out of our crown to be able to be out there in the human way that we're talking about. But like, I think a big part of what I've had to do with certain clients or certain companies is to try to build that cultural cushion and that net around it to be like, hey, it's really hard to go to media, and sometimes they quote you like this, but to sort of get people to a place that they don't want to be out there because they're afraid of the punitive answer that they said something wrong, then you're sort of in paralysis and the comms can't succeed. So I do think there's some education and cultural shifting around. Everybody should be out there publicly endorsing them as brand ambassadors, and we should be giving them the tools and the support as opposed to the punishment if it goes wrong.
Amen to that. Fully Amen. Agree. So we should probably move on to our rapid fire, given the time, right?
Rapid fire. Let's go. Do you want me to do them, Perry?
Yeah, please.
All right. Roberto, are you ready for rapid fire?
I'm ready.
What is a myth or misconception about communications that drives you crazy?
You said this earlier, actually, but that everyone is a communications expert.
Of course. Amen to that. Okay. You get to erase one corporate buzzword from existence. Which one?
Thrilled. Thrilled to announce. Are you really?
Oh my gosh, I think I have a post. Oh no, I have something about being excited. I'm excited. Everyone's so excited all the time. But yes, I'm with you. Thrilled.
Excited, thrilled, honored, humbled, you name it.
Okay, you're about to give a presentation in front of 50,000 people. What is your walkout song or walk-up song? The song you walk to the stage to.
You know Cake, the band?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The distance.
Yeah.
He's going for distance.
He's going for speed.
Speed.
Nice.
There's just some things that I have always thought about that song. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a ballsy, platform
to share this to the world.
We are a bunch of old ass people on this.
I know. Exactly.
Not to date ourselves. Okay. If you had to do a TED talk on anything but communications, what would it be?
Why travel makes better leaders.
Oh,
ooh, I like that a lot. One. It says a lot without saying much. Like in one small sentence, it says
great
a
topic.
Lot.
Yeah. Volume. Love it. Okay. You get to use one emoji for the rest of your life. Which emoji do you use?
Can I say two?
Sure.
Because they go together.
Okay.
I love the microphone. And the drop sign.
Yes.
I chuckle to myself every single time I put that down because I'm like, mic drop, but it's drop. Anyway, that would be my turn.
I love that it makes you chuckle. Like just chuckle. Now yeah, every time I see one, I'm just going to picture Roberto chuckling.
Aren't I clever?
This is what working remotely by yourself at home does to you, right?
It's the little things. Okay, Perry, please take it away.
Oh, the crowd pleaser question. So, Roberto, here's your choice. You can either have and endure round the clock hiccups for 3 months straight. Like I'm talking no relief, relentless, can't get rid of them, 3 months straight. Or you have to remove your pinky, cut off your pinky. Are you going to suffer the hiccups for 3 months or are you getting rid of a digit?
It's definitely the pinky.
Yeah.
If you babysit a different finger, I might, but pinky is ancillary. And it's a good story, right? You know, like, oh, how do you lose your pinky?
Too,
Perry made me choose will be my answer. That's how I lost my pinky.
Roberto, I had so much respect for you until that answer.
Are you hiccups? Is that yours?
I don't want to mutilate my hand. These things are amazing. Get rid of a pinky.
Call me on month two of your... Month two of your hiccups, call me without my pinky.
Your pinky is gone forever. The hiccups are gone in 3 months. Choose wisely.
You will have lost your mind by month two, man.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't be comfortable. I would be very uncomfortable and very, very irate. But 3 months later, I'm sticking my pinky out while I'm sipping tea.
Get one of those rings just to rub it in for me, the pinky ring.
Amazing. All right. Well, Roberto, before we leave, is there anything you want to plug? Any final thoughts? Anything you want to share with our audience?
Yeah. I mean, I think just one, it was awesome to, one, again, we haven't actually met in person, air quotes. So it's good to meet you all. I think, you know, it's just, I think it's really interesting where the comms world's going and how consultants and how agencies and how sort of solo entrepreneurs are playing a really interesting role right now. And I think maybe the plug or the thing to prompt to folks is I think that the comms career is changing and the opportunity to go to different places and to row your own canoe or to go in different paths is more open than it has been in a long time. And I just think that folks that are thinking about maybe taking a leap or maybe sort of trying a different avenue in their careers, I would just encourage folks to do it because I think now is a really interesting time to go for it. So that's my sort of to the industry plug.
Love
Amen.
It. Well said. Well said.
I love that. All right. Well, thank you for coming on today. We loved having you.
Had a great time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks, Poe.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.